Jody Schneider. She is a regular here, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly. Will talk to us about the biggest news in government today. And I guess one of the two things we're going to discuss with her, the energy policy and the energy bill. It's making its way through Congress. And also the nomination of the new Supreme Court Justice. And that is something that's probably making the rounds today here in Washington, D.C. Everybody talking about whether or not Sonia Sotomayor is going to make it through easily or whether she'll have a tough time with her confirmation. So let's start there. Jody, thanks so much for joining us. A pleasure to have you on Federal News Radio.
Good morning.
All right. So we've heard a lot about Ms. Sotomayor, much of it from the president himself, saying that he is just as proud as he can be to nominate her. She has more experience than any other justice that's been nominated in the last 100 years. Is she going to get an easy sweep on this process?
Well, I don't think any Supreme Court nomination gets, you know, is going to be easy through the Senate. Obviously, conservatives are going to try to, you know, do what they can to make a case against her. That's kind of their job. But relatively speaking, this is expected to be a fairly smooth sailing for a few reasons. One, she has really rendered, though she's rendered numerous decisions over her 18 years as a trial and appellate court judge, few have dealt with lightning rod issues like abortion or gay rights or guns. We don't even really know where she, you know, stands judicially on those. And those are the ones that tend to capture the public attention during confirmation hearings and make things more rigorous. She also has a what we call a clean paper trail, relatively speaking. Unlike some Supreme Court nominees, she's not authored provocative law review articles and didn't really dispense legal opinions as a member of a previous presidential administration. Some of the names you may recall that came up that the president might have picked, like Janet Napolitano or Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, would have had to kind of account for what they said, perhaps even on the campaign trail, which could have made it difficult. And the other thing is the use of the filibuster here may be a little bit tricky. As you may recall, during the when the Republicans, when the they railed against the Democrats in effect for trying to go ahead and filibuster Samuel Alito when he came up, they said he deserved an up or down vote. Well, it's going to be tough for those same people to turn around and say, well, now she doesn't deserve an up or down vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, she doesn't seem to be a complete doctrinaire. I mean, in most of the cases over her career, she has sided with plaintiffs and with, you know, with organized labor, but not all the time. There are cases where she has sided with corporate defendants. And so from, you know, a quick reading of her record and of some of her opinions, she does seem to study the legal issues themselves in some depth and not necessarily go with some kind of doctrinaire preconception.
Right. And again, because she's not tied to some high-profile decisions, I mean, the one that the president mentioned yesterday, she's perhaps, you know, one of the best she's known for, kind of ending the baseball strike. Well, you know, that's hard to come down on in terms of an ideological way. Now, of course,
unless you're an owner.
Right. Well, that's true. But there's not too many of those who are on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Lucky for her. But, you know, then, of course, there's going to be. You know, everything that she's written or said, and we're already seeing it on YouTube, is going to be, you know, making the rounds. And the other thing I think that some conservatives are going to make something out of is the president, and he said this a lot in his speech yesterday, and she said it in the remarks she made at the White House, were that she has lived the life of, you know, many people, that she has this kind of common touch. And I think there is going to be some folks who are going to be saying, particularly conservatives, well, hold on, is this what we want in jurists? Do we want them to be ruling and making decisions out of empathy rather than out of, you know, what the law says? And I think you're going to hear some of that. I think that may become a Republican mantra in this judicial confirmation process.
Yeah, and I think there is one case that people may be familiar with. It was in Connecticut, and there were some firefighters who had passed a test for promotion. And because there were no African Americans that passed that same test, the city questioned whether or not it had some racial bias to it. And she heard the case and agreed that the city could, in fact, take the test off the table and then recompete those jobs for promotion. And that's, I think that's one that people have probably heard about.
Right. I think that's, yeah, and obviously they're going to hear a lot more about it in coming weeks. And, you know, we had Rush Limbaugh yesterday saying, well, she's a reverse racist, going ahead and using that. And also the fact she told a California audience at a speech at a panel in 2001 that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male judge.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there you go. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, the people are going to take, whether out of context or whatever, and say, well, look, she doesn't like white people and she doesn't like white male judges, and how can we have her on the Supreme Court?
It seems like there's a phenomenon that is dogging almost all public figures, whether they're on the left or the right. And we saw this during the Obama campaign, but we see it with conservatives as well. They go to groups that they have some cultural affinity to, and they use language and speak in a way that they don't in the mainstream. And so the question is, do they carry those cultural biases or prejudices or ways of speaking into the public life that they perform? And very often people actually, in fact, don't.
Well, and I also
think, I think it works both sides.
Right. And I also think, you know, this is a phenomenon of the 24-hour, you know, news channel and YouTube and everything else. Anything that anybody says in any kind of setting, once they get to, you know, obviously a very high-profile process like the Supreme Court confirmation process, anything they've ever said is going to be used and by, you know, people who want to use it against them, but also by people who want to use it for them. I mean, you know, the president was using her life story as part of this. The fact that, you know, she grew up, you know, after her father had died, her family was in public housing in the Bronx. Well, that he's using that as part of the narrative about her to have people feel, oh, this is, you know, particularly speaking to Hispanics who were a big voting bloc for him in the most recent election. So I think, you know, it kind of cuts both ways. They want the people who want to support her are going to use the narrative. People who want to, you know, who don't want to see her on the court or who at least want to wage some kind of battle against her are going to use whatever words they have. And, you know, they have some speeches she's made.
All right. We're talking this morning to Jody Schneider, senior editor, Congressional Quarterly. Let's quickly talk about the energy bill that was read very speedily in the House last week. And this, of course, is from Chairman Henry Waxman, the so-called cap and trade bill. What does it contain, and who are the biggest objectors? Is it the energy companies?
Yeah, well, this bill got through the House Energy and Commerce Committee. It was a week-long process. I mean, he read it fairly speedily, but it took a week to get this through that panel. They gave the Republicans, and this was actually, you know, a kind of crafty way to handle this for Chairman Waxman. The Republicans had said they wanted to, you know, offer all these amendments. Well, he let them offer a fair number of amendments and let them kind of, you know, bog things down for part of the week and then got going later in the week. So they did get it through the committee. And the cap-and-trade provisions, what this bill does is it kind of puts everything together. That has been the House method. They combine energy and the climate legislation into one bill. In the Senate, they've done it in two parts. However, there's some talk in the Senate that Senate leaders are looking to that bill, particularly Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid would like to see kind of the House bill or something like the House bill go through the Senate where you kind of do everything at once. It is the cap and trade provisions that are the more controversial because they do require you get credits you know, this is the whole pollution credit and paying for the amount that you pollute is in essence how this works. And it allows, obviously, market trading. The Republicans against this bill have started calling it cap and tax because of that.
And so what are the prospects of the House and the Senate reconciling if there's one bill in one place, two in the other? I mean, does that seem to kind of be a strategy to get around the debate otherwise?
Well, I think
go ahead.
I think the House bill is going to. I think they're going to see House floor action on this pretty soon. But the other thing that has to happen with that bill is there's eight other committees that want to weigh in. The ways and means on the tax provisions of it. You know, there's a lot of jurisdiction issues. So it's not going to be a slide right to the House floor, first of all. It's got to go through these other committees. And it could, you know, could delay floor action at least until later in the summer, maybe until the fall. And there's some people talking about whether the Democratic caucus is even behind this bill, whether they have enough, you know, votes for it, or whether they're sort of hoping it gets delayed for a good long time. Then in the Senate, you have the issue of how does this move? And there's been some Senate leaders who say they, and Reid among them, they want to, you know, move the one bill. Others are really against that. They want to move Waxman's bill to the floor first, and then they want to, they want to move their two bills to the floor first, and think that's the way to go about it. And Barbara Boxer is among those people, and she's the chairwoman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee.
Well, so, I think the only thing speedy about this process was the speed reader that they hired,
right,
and everything else is going to take a good long time.
Well, I remember Woody Allen, he said, I took the Evelyn Wood speed reading course, and I read War and Peace in 20 minutes. It's about Russia.
Well, yeah, so I think that is true. And, you know, this is complicated legislation. Again, what's interesting here is that one of the things it would do is it would raise a lot of money. And one of the things that the healthcare overhaul is going to need is some way to pay for it. So there's some people who are saying, well, you know, they may not want to philosophically kind of tackle the whole cap and trade provision, but if they want a way to fund the healthcare overhaul, they may need to do that.